You are listening to the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, weekdays 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. And now the man behind the mic, a private investigator with over 30 years under his belt, Doug Hagmann.
And good morning, everyone. It's 6 a.m. on the West Coast of America, 9 a.m. here in the East. Welcome to Hagmann. It's the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour for today. It's Tuesday, June 19th, 2018. It is, well, it's 1,100 days ago today. 1,100 days ago today, it was June 16th, 2015, when Donald J. Trump announced his presidency. So we are in day number 1,100 of the Communist Democratic Socialist Scorched Earth Policy, the war against Donald J. Trump, the war against freedom, the war against you and I. And, of course, he became the presumptive nominee on May 4th, 2016, officially on July 19th, 2016. And, well, right now, day 516 of his presidency, it's the real agenda to take down Donald Trump. Now, I got a special treat for everyone. Here's the deal. I have been doing this show, the Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour, now for, well, almost, yeah, it's almost a year. It'll be July 21st, 2017 when I first started it out, and I want to thank everyone who follows me on Global Star Radio Network as well as BTR. When you spread the show, listen to the archives. But one thing I have never, ever done in this show, in the history of this show, is have a guest. Well, given the severity of the headlines, I'm going to make an exception. The first and really the only exception to date and the first exception. And with me is going to be here in about 30 seconds is Tracy Beans. You can follow her on Twitter, and she is an amazing researcher. I just want you to those people listening, understand this. I've got a, in my office, which is connected to the studio, there is my office, and then there's an adjacent office, and in the adjacent office is a conference table, and the conference table has several chairs, a filing cabinet, and of course, whiteboards across the walls. And it is a somewhat of a investigative hub, if you will, for all of our investigations, what we do here. So with that in mind, imagine just, well, pull up a chair. Pull up a chair to sit down to our conference table and listen as Tracy Beans and I, we're just going to have a conversation. We're going to have a conversation about what's really going on in America. And if you don't know who Tracy Beans is from our flagship show that airs on Global Star Satellite Radio, as well as BTR and YouTube, then look her up, follow her on Twitter, support her efforts. And I mean that because we need investigative journalists. And one of the best, I believe, investigative citizen journalists, or I wouldn't have her on, is, in fact, Tracy Beans. So, Tracy, thanks for joining me this morning in this unconventional break from protocol. But we need to talk. So, thanks.
This is you're welcome. This is fantastic. I'm honored. Wow. I need a certificate or something for this, Doug. This is amazing. Thank you so much for your kind words always and for having me on for the, you know, I guess a break from protocol first guest sort of thing. This is amazing.
Well, you know what? You deserve it. And look, I'm the head of the CEO of Hagmann Investigative Services, and I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to make you, actually, I'll go down to the clerk of court's office and make you actually a private investigator, get you your credentials, because you've got the experience, and I mean that. I mean, folks, Tracy is so attentive to details. Rarely have I come across any individual who has the natural talent of investigations, but I don't want to... anyone who follows Tracy knows that. So, Tracy, this morning I caught a couple of tweets from last night and this morning. We're facing today the House hearings with Horowitz. Can we start there?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that.
Okay. Your thoughts. We already went through the Senate. It seemed like some softball questions, missing senators, whatever. I don't know. But you picked up some good stuff, some good tidbits. Let's go to yesterday's hearing, I guess. The days all run together for me, but what did you think of that, the hearings yesterday?
Actually, I one of the things that I walked away from the hearings with was how little ammo the Democrats had to flip the script. You know, usually in these hearings, it's like a dog and pony show, and the Democrats go all partisan, and they have, like, you know, they have their extreme sort of gotcha things all queued up, and they didn't have much to stand on yesterday. Therefore, the questions really were mostly of substance and when they weren't of substance, they were very weak in their framing, as well as it was very clear that there was a memo that went out. Here are your three things that you need to hammer home that are, you know, anti-Trump for the day. And none of them had anything to do with the report. It was really, really very painfully obvious to me anyway that they're slandering. The tone of it, the feeling of the hearings, it was just, it was actually kind of cool to see for once.
Yeah. Good points all. Were you able to get through the entire 568 pages of the report so far?
Oh, No. I got hung up on the segment I covered yesterday for a good almost 48 hours because I needed to hammer that down.
Gotcha.
So,
all right.
Yeah, I'm still going.
I have to tell you, I did read through. I took the content. I took away the initial part, the analysis, the executive summary. Took that away, and I just went through the content, and I found some pretty interesting tidbits. I'll save those for later. But you know, one thing you commented on this, and I know I'm kind of jumping around here a little bit, but you commented on this, and I wanted to make sure I spoke to you about this before we go any further. And again, picture yourself, folks, sitting around the conference table with a tremendous investigator. Again, Tracy Beans, follow her on Twitter and support her work. You can follow her on gab.ai as well. She's got a Patreon account. Please support her because she's doing a lot of work on our behalf and for really virtually nothing. As we all are. But anyway, and she's got a tremendously popular YouTube channel, but broadcast channel. The thing I want to mention to you, or want to ask you about, was Paul Sperry's message. Paul Sperry talking about a possible link between a woman by the name of Amanda, what is it, Renteria?
Renteria,
thank you. Could be like the missing link between Lynch and the possible smoking gun with Loretta Lynch in the investigation. What are your feelings on that?
I think that is definitely something they're trying to keep out of the public eye. Now, important to note is there are two appendices attached to this IG report I keep reminding everybody about. One of them is classified. One of them is criminal for law enforcement purposes. That should tell everybody everything they need to know. And I really, you know, Horowitz alluded to this yesterday, that the classification level that they put on these things is so high that not even members of the committees at the highest levels can view them. So he's trying to work to lower, figure out why they did that and then lower that classification so that people can actually see what's in there. And apparently not many people have. Now, we know that there's an attorney, there's a grand jury in panels right now, and we've gotten now, there's no doubt now that that's the case. But this email between Lynch and this woman, who is also, I believe, tied to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, is really the thing that would bring the hammer down on Lynch. We could talk about how this hearing yesterday, basically, and the IG report as a whole, basically solidifies the testimony of all these people so that when they're called, if they're called or if they have been, in front of a grand jury, if they waver from what they said, their credibility is destroyed and or they've perjured themselves, because I'm not positive if they've gone under oath or not with the IG. But somebody on my Twitter brought that up to me, and I retweeted that thread because it was so well done, and I'm going to give them a plug because it was so well done, but I have to find it.
Yeah, you know, I've got to say, and folks, again, Tracy Beans on Twitter, if you don't follow Tracy, you got to do so, because there's a lot of great information that's being published and posted. So... You know, again, as we look at this as investigative journalists or investigators, what are we to make of this whole thing? I guess let's take a wider view of this. The IG report, the Democratic response or Democratic socialists saying, you know, it's just a big, it's all about nothing. Even some conservatives taking Horowitz to task. Your broad view of this. Your broad view.
It was posturing to get everybody to just wipe it away and not read it and not look into it. And I think that, you know, if you are one of the many people, I think this hearing got more attention than, you know, they're used to hearings getting of this nature from normal everyday citizens. If you walked away from that yesterday believing still what you were force-fed from pundits, the media alike over the weekend, then you weren't listening carefully, because I think Horowitz dismissed the, quote, nothing burger claims very, you know, very substantially yesterday with his testimony. He was very clear about how horrible what he found was, and that he, you know, he clarified the bias comment. You know, the Democrats tout, they found nothing but biased about the investigation, and Horowitz clarified that yesterday in saying that he found nothing documentary that would prove bias. There's a big distinction. Yep.
Exactly, and I pointed that out, I think, yesterday, in my show yesterday, when I read further in the report, and I don't remember the page, and I don't think I've gotten my notes in front of me here, shamefully, as I sit at the studio. It's, in fact, they're on the, I think they're pinned on the wall, but yeah, he said there's no, his wording was very interesting, that there was nothing, no documented political bias that, I think that was the word, no documented political bias that ultimately would have changed the, effect.
That basically means nobody said, I'm going to make this decision because I want Hillary Clinton to be president. That doesn't mean that there wasn't bias. It just means that he wasn't able to prove it. And he also made a very important distinction in that, you know, whenever Peter Strzok was involved in a decision, he attributed bias to that decision. Peter Strzok, especially in regards to whether or not he was going to pursue the Trump-Russia case or the mid-year exam, he prioritized the Trump-Russia case over the mid-year exam. And I think that he spoke out against Strzok and Page very, very strongly yesterday. And, you know, even the Democrats were having a hard time brushing those comments from those few under the rug. So, yeah, they just didn't prove that. They weren't able to, and another thing, based on what they were tasked with looking at, the decisions that they chose to examine, they weren't able to find documentary evidence of bias. We also have to think about the fact that, I don't know how to phrase this the right way, one of the contradictions that I found was with the immunity deals, Doug, and I'm sorry I'm jumping around.
That's okay.
During the hearing yesterday, Horowitz said that they raised the serious concerns about the immunity deals, but when I read the report, I didn't get that from the report. And I'm in the conclusions of that section, and I didn't feel the severity of what he was vocally saying yesterday, written in the report.
Okay, all right. So there's more to come. And again, people have the knee-jerk reaction instead of responding or analyzing like you do, and looking through the minutia, the granular details, they react. And of course, that's what we're seeing in the course of the Democratic Socialist media spin on this. All right. So, but one thing too, you mentioned mid-year exam. I've noticed, and I can't believe this, there are so many people out there saying, well, what's mid-year exam? And folks, that's the, that's the name of the Hillary Clinton email investigation that was given to that investigation. So, okay.
Or MYE. So everybody, a lot of people have been asking that. It's okay. When you're limited by characters, you have to come up with creative ways to say things.
Exactly. All right. I want to be very conscientious and appreciative of your time today, because we here very shortly the kickoff of the House hearings are going to be coming up. Walk me through what you expect to see, because you've got your, I see the animated GIF there. You've got your popcorn ready.
I was honored, Doug, to be able to sit and have an interview with Robin Gritz, who is very much a part of all of this, even though it doesn't appear so at the surface. She's a wonderful woman. I'm glad, I'm honored to have met her, and she's as invested in all of this as I am. And we were chatting it up yesterday, and one of the focuses that we both have is Devin Nunez. I'm so excited to see his line of questioning. He seems to have taken the same approach to this report as all of us have in the granular nature of it. He has actually crowdsourced some information from his constituents and people who follow him, and he asked for whoever the investigator is that speaks French in the report, in terms of text messages. And I think the line of questioning from him is going to be stellar. I'm excited to see it. And one other thing I need to point out, too, is Michael Horowitz was, I don't know if you'll agree with me, a breath of fresh air in terms of his objectivity, in terms of his fairness. I think he was very straightforward with the answers, very, very detailed in his responses. And I think it's clear that the only thing that Michael Horowitz is interested in is the truth. I don't think there's any leaning any way, which way for him. That's just my interpretation. Other people will differ with that, but that's what I saw.
Yeah, I've got to agree with you on that. I did DVR save the hearings. I'm going to go through them again. Of course, but yeah, you know, I that's the impression I got. And of course, you know, reading body language, whether you believe in that or just the reliance on the substance of the answers, I believe that you're correct in this case.
Do you want to know who I don't feel that about?
Oh, do tell.
I'm sure that Christopher Wray is a great FBI director in terms of what he does with his agents. He's a very private person. I think he's very by the book. I think that I'm not doubting his ability, but I just don't think he's very good at public speaking. He's just smarmy to me. I don't know what it is. I just don't know if I like him personally. Not to say that he's not doing a good job or he's not doing the right thing. But I think some of the senators took him to task on his press conference, which we spoke about on the main show last week.
Yes. Very interesting. Ray, do you think he's obviously in a CYA position, but do you think he was just uncomfortable, or do you think he was being deliberately deceptive?
No, I think he's uncomfortable. I, from the answers that he gave yesterday, we know that there are dozens of ongoing investigations going on right now inside of the FBI. He's basically unable to talk about anything at this point, but I just don't like the way he carries himself, so that's a personal thing on my part.
It's important because, you know, as investigators, I mean, 30 years in the job, you gotta read people, how they, their body language, their I get that. So it's a good point. Ray, yeah.
And again, I'm not besmirching what he's doing or saying that we shouldn't trust him at all. Not at all. I just roll my eyes kind of. You know what I mean? Like, dude, come on, man. Like, stand up, do something. You know, this is not his. This is not his inherited, you know, this is not under his watch that this stuff happened. And I understand he has to protect those agents, and I think he's done a really good job. He's protected the Bureau, like, in terms of the everyday people that are walking around, the doing the grunt work and doing the hard work in the FBI, I think they're all just as angry as we are, to be honest, about the upper echelon and what they've done. So I think he's done a good job of protecting his agents and saying over and over again how he's gone to every field office and seen what they do. I mean, that's basically his cookie cutter answer to every question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, and that's fine. I get that. Now, you mentioned your interview with Robin Gritz. I did see that, if you don't mind, because although there is some audience overlap between the flagship show and my show, I've got a different audience speaking to those people. Where can people find your interview with Robin Gritz?
That's really kind of you. to do. That's nice. It was on Your Voice America.
Okay.
Yeah. It was actually a show that I was invited onto with that network, and Robin was the co-host. It was kind of like a Morning View type of a format.
Okay.
Robin is important because of what she experienced with McCabe and the fact that Flynn stepped in to help her.
Exactly, and a lot of people don't know that. And I think Robin, in fact, we're going to invite Robin on our flagship show because she's got so much information. She was put in she's no longer with the FBI. That is correct, right? I mean,
no, she isn't. And you want to know what I find most honorable about Robin is that one of the goals in terms of, you know, what she'd like to see after her life has been just taken apart by this. It's been, you know, how the government will drag you through lawsuit after lawsuit and bankrupt you. Well, she's gone through that. And she actually wants to go back to the FBI and serve the country. After all the stuff that she's gone through, I think that's one of the most honorable things I've experienced. You would think that someone would be like, I'm done with that. No way. She wants to be reinstated.
Yeah. Yeah, she believes in the institution and of course, the FBI. No, I fully understand that. Wow, okay. And, of course, folks, I'm so happy to have her, is Tracy Beans. Follow her on Twitter. And, of course, do so right after the show or during the show if you're sitting by your computer. Okay. Bottom line here, and again, being very conscious of your time, bottom line here, are we going to see perp walks? Because, man, so many people are like saying, this is just a bunch of nothing, and until we see people in handcuffs, are we going to see people?
I do think so, yes. And you know, yesterday, if you were listening carefully enough, they confirmed that there are these criminal investigations going on, currently as we speak. Horowitz actually... And Christopher Wray said that they needed to get permission to declassify or to give out some of the information inside of the report. Because of that, Hoover is working. We have not seen an indictment. We have not seen an indictment yet. That doesn't necessarily mean there isn't one, and I'll keep saying that. I don't know what's going on there. Obviously, nobody does, but that doesn't mean there aren't indictments. I just hope that the grand jury that he has impaneled right now is not being used in the same way that the grand jury for the mid-year exam is.
Okay, which is an important, I don't know if you call it a distinction, but okay. All right, wow.
They didn't subpoena anybody. I mean, yeah. they barely did anything. That grand jury barely did anything. And this is another concern. I know that I don't know if we have time to talk about this.
We got all the time in the world. So I'm just worried about your time because I know that you're a very busy lady. So
I'm fine.
Okay. Well, then let's just keep going because people want to hear from you. And I've got, you know what? I'll just say this publicly. I've got probably a dozen emails sitting here asking for you, just you and I, to speak about, or as we're doing right now, about the report and the investigation and about the war against Donald Trump. So fire away with anything you got.
Wow. That's great. One of the things that I found interesting was in terms of the grand jury in this case, and it kind of like raises a lot of questions for me about how things are done and if this is normal. Maybe you can help me. They didn't want to bring witnesses in front of the grand jury in the mid-year exam because of the fact that the focus of this was so much classified information. So they were very hesitant to bring a witness in front of a grand jury because they didn't want to have to talk about classified information in front of 23 grand jurors that were not cleared. So they were very careful about not bringing witnesses. I mean, how do you use a grand jury in our justice system to prosecute people or question people at levels of government that are that high? How do you get a fair trial if the prosecutors are like, well, they can't hear this because they're not cleared? What kind of an obstacle is that to overcome, and how do you even overcome it?
And that's a good question. I really never gave much consideration to that, except to say that I would believe at that level you would have to have in-camera or closed-door hearings with the congressional committees. I don't know. I've really never thought of it in those terms. Okay, so that's a hell of an obstacle to have to
overcome.
Yeah,
I mean, you can, from one perspective, I can understand it. Like, if I'm, I look at this report and I try to, I'm really trying to remain objective and see both sides of it to come to my own conclusion about what I think they did, So if that's a sincere concern of theirs, and given what, in other words, they didn't, the team investigating this started investigating and realized that the State Department was such a mess in terms of them following policy and procedure about classified information, about how they communicated it. The IT systems there were in complete disarray, it appears. They never worked overseas. They were slow. So these people invented their own ways of handling this information, and they said, the team investigating the MYE said, if they were to continue, they would be investigating for years all the malfeasance going on at the State Department. They had to narrow their scope. And they were very, very concerned about exposing classified information to the grand jury in order to be able to then obtain whatever they needed to obtain. What a stalemate to be at. How do you even, what recourse do we as citizens have if prosecutors don't want to? I mean, obviously, these people who were being investigated didn't give two rats about classified information. They were sharing it all over the place so that foreign actors could grab it. These are citizens sitting on this grand jury trying to make this right, and the prosecutors won't bring the evidence in front of them because they're not cleared to see it. How do you get around that? It needs to be addressed.
Very true. I don't know the answer to that. And anyone out there who's, and I know we have some assistant U.S. attorneys listening, and I know we've got many attorneys listening. Yeah, fire off an email, of course, Doug@HagmanReport.com for any kind of assistance, and I'll pass along to Tracy.
I think I know where they'll go is to military tribunal.
And there's a lot of talk about that. Do you think the American people, and this is a softball question, the American people, are we going to put up with that, or is that going to be looked at like some Nazi-esque kind of approach?
It's a hard path to walk down. Now think about, if you're being a principal, like I'm a libertarian, if I was looking at this from that perspective, it's tough. Because on the one hand, you need to make sure that this stops and the people are held accountable. On the other hand, that's something that's very, very, it's a scary path and precedent to set. So it's a very interesting place in history that we're in right now where we have to even consider, how do we prosecute these people and hold them accountable for what they've done? It's weird. It's a very interesting place in history, I have to say.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And this, to me, is the biggest story of our lifetime, certainly my lifetime, and I lived through Watergate. I remember watching the hearings, the Watergate hearings, but to me, this should be on every station in the country, these hearings. That's how big this is. I mean, what we've got, essentially, and just to drive this point home again, we've got an entrapment operation against the opposition, the opposing political candidate Donald Trump from day one. I'm going to ask you this. Before I forget, the official date of investigation, everyone is agreeing or not agreeing, July 31st of 2016 is when it all began. But man, I'm seeing a lot of stuff that this began really long before that, the setting up of Donald Trump. I know you've talked about this and approached this and investigated this. Your thoughts on the, when this whole mess began?
Definitely not July. We have texts between Strzok and Page talking about how they have to switch from the Patriot Act, meaning the 702 queries that were being run by independent contractors outside of guidelines that flagged Admiral Rogers back in April of 2016, saying they have to switch from that to wire carrying current, meaning probably phone monitoring, et cetera, or some other sort of surveillance of these people. And we're starting to see evidence that some of the people in this campaign were placed there very early on. I'm not ready to necessarily go forward with that yet because I'm still looking into it, but things are starting to get weird. It's definitely not July, that's for sure. definitely not.
Yeah, I'm thinking, well, really, that's why I mentioned, 1,100 days since Donald Trump announced. I don't think it was much beyond that. And certainly, I'm looking at the May 4th, 2016, when he became the presumptive nominee, that things really began to get serious. And then that July 31st is just a CYA date to make it legal.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. Now, I don't think that he was the only one under surveillance either.
Well, exactly. Okay, and I've got reports. I can't confirm it. I've got reports that there was physical surveillance conducted by FBI assets, Western intelligence assets of Donald Trump, the campaign, upwards of three, if not six. I can't prove it, but that's pretty disconcerting when you look at it.
Yeah, and you'll have to think about where some of these people popped around from. For example, Papadopoulos was with the Carson campaign before he was with the Trump campaign.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you. Your thoughts, by the way, where is Mifsud, the Maltese professor?
He's who knows?
MIA.
Yes.
Okay. And those people who listen to this program know, of course, who I'm referring to. What have we not talked about that needs attention here? Because I just want to pick your brain. I could pick your brain all day. And folks, follow Tracy on Twitter. She's going to be tweeting out tidbits of information as she can, as she watches, listens to the testimony today. So, but what haven't we covered that needs to be covered?
You know, given the audience that you have, I'd love to throw this one out there and see what comes back if we have a few minutes to run through it. I on page 141, for everyone who's keeping track, on page 141 is section 10, section X. There is mention of an internal INSC investigation into the mid-year exam, spurred on, apparently, by James Baker, who noticed that the Peter Strzok text messages that the OIG had produced were biased, and he says, I needed to do my own investigation into this. Now, remember, the OIG investigation is concurrently running at this point in time. So, apparently, Baker goes to Carl Gaddis, who's only mentioned by name this few times inside the report, and he says, do me a favor, help me run this internal investigation. Gaddis apparently asked, or someone asked permission of the IG to be able to do it. The IG says, sure. Now, Gaddis, we know at this time, is being asked to testify in front of Senate and Judiciary Committee in terms of his knowledge of what happened in the mid-year exam, etc. And Rod Rosenstein and him are going back, and Grassley are going back and forth about the fact that Rybicki and Gaddis can't testify because of their connection to the special counsel. And it's very contentious. So I started digging around to see what Gaddis was doing for the special counsel, and it turns out that he's supervising FBI agents who were on the special counsel investigation. So it made it very interesting when I found out in this report that the team of investigators that did the internal investigation came from FBI Boston. We all know that Mueller and his crew are from, they're Boston acolytes. They come from there, and so the team coming from Boston raised an interesting flag for me. They did this internal investigation, and they used the main file to do it, the main investigative file given to them by Gaddis, but lots of stuff was missing from this file, leading this team to come to incorrect conclusions. The immunity deals weren't in it, so why not? Why were they doing this in the first place? It took them 6 days. Magically, after this was done, or right in the midst of it, Gaddis was voluntarily cleared to testify in front of the committee. Just a lot of questions here for me.
Okay. Wow. That's a pretty deep dive into that area of the report. You said page 121, section 10, or 141, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I spent a weekend on it because it just something about it just really rubbed me the wrong way. I didn't just glide past it for that reason. And I spent a long time, probably too long, researching this weekend. But that's what set me back a bit on the rest of the report.
All right. And I just want to be clear, or I want to make sure I'm clear on this, because I'm at Section 10, FBI Inspection Division, Internal File Review of the Mid-Year Investigation. So,
yep.
Okay. Yeah.
So basically, the IG interviewed the folks that did this review. It was two criminal division FBI agents, I believe, and one counterintelligence agent. The internal team, the INSD team, came to the conclusion that they didn't like the way the investigation was classified. They did find fault with a lot of the things that happened, but the IG, Horowitz, concluded that because they didn't have all the information, they came to incorrect conclusions. So they used this main investigative file about the mid-year exam given to them by the person who asked them to do the investigation in the first place, and the information that they really needed to come to the conclusion wasn't even in there.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for restating that a little bit differently. Okay. I get that. And I'm looking at page 141 right now under Section 10, and I'm seeing that I've got some notes in the margin here. Yeah, okay. Very interesting take on this. All right. Wow.
So I think that the special counsel, it could be possible that the special counsel was involved somehow in running this internal mid-year exam review. That's my theory at this point, given that the FBI just came from Boston, that Gaddis was, you know, was not permitted to testify in front of the committee because he was working with a special counsel, and then just as this was finishing up, he was granted the ability to go ahead and do so. Just those little things lead me towards the theory that I believe there may be a chance that the special counsel was conducting its own review, but the review the special counsel did was kind of useless because they didn't have the information they needed to make the right decision.
Got it. Okay.
And why not? Who took it out? Why wasn't it in there? You know what I mean? Like, if this is the main file...
Yeah.
And this really is, Doug, a conversation like we would have offline. This is pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's why I'm hesitant to go. Yeah. Why not? Okay. And so expand on that. Why not? Just speculate.
I don't know. And I don't know if maybe this was a way to fish that out. Maybe they were having them do this so they could fish out what they put in the official. I don't know. You know, this is all speculation. I don't know. But I did go public with the findings because they're there and they're very out in the open for everyone to see. There's no secrets there. But I don't know why. And I think it's important because the IG dedicated two or three pages to it and about 4 or 5 footnotes. So there's a reason why they mentioned it, just like there was a reason why they mentioned Loretta Lynch was on the call with the New York field office.
Which you brought, I think you were one of the first, if not the first, to really bring that out with Loretta Lynch, that whole swapping of the team midstream.
Yeah.
For those who don't recall or don't know what Tracy's talking about, if you don't mind, just briefly tell the audience what that was about, the Loretta Lynch swapping the team.
Yeah. Absolutely. In the McCabe leak report that came out about his leaks to the Wall Street Journal, there was a section in there where they talk about how the, and you'll hear remnants of this in the testimony today. They talk about it. They skate around it as best as they can. But basically, Loretta Lynch got on the phone with McCabe to call the New York field office to admonish them for leaking. They say to the Inspector General when interviewed about this that they were admonishing them for leaking about this Wall Street Journal article. But we know, given timelines and piecing things together, that they were actually not speaking about that at all. They were speaking about leaking what was on Anthony Weiner's laptop. And given that right around this time, Eric Prince did an interview with Breitbart about the contents of that laptop, the fact that there was sensitive material in regards to exploitations with of children, pay-to-play from the Clinton Foundation, and all sorts of other stuff that wasn't made mainstream, in quotes. Lynch apparently threatened the team that she would prosecute them for the Eric Garner case. Eric Garner was a very high-profile case at the time. He was killed because of you know, police conduct, but it looks to be, the jury's out on what exactly happened, but she was basically hanging that over the heads of the NYPD should they go forward with leaking this information because they weren't getting the action that they required from the Justice Department on what they found. And, Eric Prince references the fact that they were threatened, Maine Justice was threatening the field office and the NYPD with this prosecution, amongst other things, as per you, Doug, right? So,
that's right.
And then now we've gotten even more proof of that in this IG report from the contemporaneous notes of the gentleman assigned to look at the laptop and his bullet-pointed personal notes that we spoke about the other day that were found with bullet point E, I believe, which was child, what was it, child?
The crimes against children, I think I've got that noted here. Yeah. Absolutely incredible stuff.
There was a reason.
Go ahead.
There was a reason why. I just feel like, honestly, like when you read this stuff, there is a reason why that was mentioned in the report. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Doug.
No, please.
I don't know how... It didn't make sense in the report. There was no conclusion from that. Do you understand what I mean? Like, they didn't say Loretta Lynch shouldn't have been on the phone with, or McCabe did this wrong, or whatever. It was just there.
There was no conclusive. There was nothing in there to tell me or tell us the resolution of that.
Right.
Which could mean a number of things, I think. Your best guess? I mean, could we be looking at something coming down the pike here really soon that could be extremely damaging? Or is this a kind of a handoff or a punt, shall we say?
No, I don't think it's a punt. And the reason why is if you're looking at the media, the timing of the child separation immigration debate right now,
yes,
and all of this coming to the forefront, is very interesting to me in that we're starting to see, like, Cheryl Atkinson, for example, start talking about human trafficking and child trafficking. Mainstream media outlets starting to cover this sort of a topic where they didn't really have a reason to before. Not a reason, but they didn't. It wasn't an easy entree for them to just pick up and run with. And it seems that, you know, Fox used that section of the report on screen the other day. So the conversation is starting to get very serious in regards to human trafficking right now and child trafficking. So the fact that all of this is coming out, it could be a coincidence and divine intervention, or there could be more to it. I don't know, but it's something that we've been talking about for a long time, but now is getting mainstream attention.
And folks, if you follow Tracy on Twitter, you can see where she tweeted out yesterday, human trafficking is finally getting the attention it deserves. And she retweeted Cheryl Atkinson, who said, so sad how many young kids are trafficked to the U.S. under the guise that they're the children of traffickers. And it goes on. I'm right there with you. And I think it's no coincidence, as you mentioned, about how this is being really kind of spun by the people involved in the manner in which it is, because it's the immorality of the open border left that feeds into the, or it's a tool of the child traffickers, I guess.
I think that they're digging their own graves in a way, though, Doug. I mean, you know, they're focusing on it so much and trying to pin it on Trump that I really feel like at the right time this will backfire right in. I mean, it's already backfiring. There are already mainstream journalists pointing out the hypocrisy of the establishment left and powers that be, blaming Trump for this atrocity when there's documented proof that that's not the case at all. And they're kind of floundering about it now. They pick out some crime to blame on this administration that was really just from administration's past, and it's really not working out well for them. And I think it'll be their undoing, to be honest with you.
I have to agree with you. In the deep dive looking at this, I have to agree that this will be their undoing, and so be it. I mean, this is perhaps one of the most hideous subjects of all, and we've all been taken to task over supposedly hyping up this issue when, in fact, it's, if anything, I think we've understated the severity of it.
Agreed, agreed. It's one of those issues that if you start to talk about it, this is what happened. The left basically was able to weaponize this topic as a conspiracy theory based off of the very real investigation into Pedogate, as they call it. You know, they were able to somehow co-opt that and you know, plant somebody to do something horrible or have someone do something horrible or someone out of their own volition did something horrible, and then now everything attached to it is conspiracy land. But that's not going to work anymore. And if you're an honest person, whatever your political ideology, you need to step outside of the paradigm and really honestly ask yourself if the hill you want to die on is not accepting that children are being exploited. I mean, these are our kids. Do you really want to politically die on that hill, that you're not going to support the prosecution and the end of this horrible, you know, practice? Is that really where you want to lay down? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, is that really where you want to, like, you know?
Well stated.
It's true. It's like, you know, there's one issue where we can come together as a people. It should be our children.
Exactly. Exactly. And it sickens me, especially on Father's Day, this past Sunday, to see the spin that is being attributed to what's going on at the border. And, of course, you know, I actually, man, I can see where some people would actually feel, I mean, this gets to you emotionally. This is such an emotional hot topic here with the children, and they're being used as pawns in this, in many ways.
Politically.
Yeah, politically. Exactly.
And they always do that. They always use, you know, they take a tragedy and they politicize it to try and use it for their own gain, but they're so blatant about it now that everybody realizes it. There are plain and simple facts about this that, you know, are coming to light, which is, I think it's a wonderful thing, even though it's painful at first.
No, I agree with you on that. And of course, folks, if you're listening, that's right, you are listening to the Doug Hagman Investigative Hour, Doug Hagman Radio Show. I know that you might be thinking, wait a minute, you never have a guest? Well, we do, Tracy Beans. By the way, she should have like 250,000 followers on Twitter for the content that she provides. So as well as being, and I would urge everyone to support her investigative efforts. They're well worth it. She's got a Patreon account, Tracy Beans on Patreon. Please do us a solid, follow her. Let's get her followers up over 250,000 so her voice won't be silenced, because she's got some great investigative talent and investigative work product. One more question. Again, I keep saying that, and I know your time is valuable. Comey, James Comey, I got to ask you this question. This might sound like it's out of left field. You know, I looked at his Twitter. I looked at his entire Twitter presence, from the fake name that he used initially and then came out and used his real name. But I'm seeing some really strange things, like him standing in Iowa. Your thoughts? I mean, what's he doing here? I mean, has he lost his mind, or is he sending coded messages? I mean, I'm almost thinking, man, this guy's sending some coded message somehow. Don't laugh at me, man. It's just me.
Look, I never discount anything, regardless. And I have had some conversations with some friends that, you know, I'm just looking at him objectively, and you can read some of those tweets in two different ways.
Yeah.
So, and it seems to me like I started pondering, it's funny that you asked, because I started looking at this morning. Look, if you're investigating something, I'm sure that you can attest to this, Doug, at least this is my perspective on it. You can never slam the door on any one theory completely, because it will bias your path forward. You know, sometimes it turns out that the person you thought was the criminal was the victim. Not that I'm saying James Comey's a victim, please. But things change, right? Some of the actions he took, it almost looks like he knew the fix was in, and he was trying to get the information out there so that some events would be set into motion. Like the July 5th speech that he made, where he basically said, you've committed all these crimes, Hillary Clinton, but you're not going to be prosecuted What was that all? Look at that from a different perspective. What do you think he was trying to do there?
I know what you're saying. I know where you're kind of headed here. You raise a good point, and I would ask the listeners of this program to kind of look at it from that perspective as well, or a different perspective. What was he attempting to do in that July 5th press conference? Because unorthodox.
Yeah. It was very unorthodox. It was like basically he lists all the crimes she committed, right? We also don't know who made. I don't think that he was the one who made the edits to change the language in the speech that he did. Separately, the memos that he leaked. What was in them eventually? They held those memos back from the public view for so long. What was in those memos that was damning about anything?
That's a rhetorical question, I suspect, but it's a good question. What was in those memos that was so damaging?
Yeah.
Wow. Folks, you've got a seat at the investigative table. These are valid questions. These are questions that need to be addressed, and this is the wider angle view here, I think. And you're right about the tunnel vision, the investigative bias, or we as investigators searching the facts. We sometimes shut the door on things, and man, it's a wrong thing to do. Good points all. So, okay. Which leads me, because my wife and I were talking. She actually sat down at the conference table, came to my office. It was yesterday. It was Monday. Yesterday. And she asked the question, do you think, she said, Comey's book, how fast it came out. What was, what do you think about that? And I'll just toss that question to you. Was that some sort of, that book coming out, was that intended? How did that happen so quickly? And why? If it means anything.
I don't know, but that book, there's a couple different perspectives. And again, to the audience, like, I'm speculating, we're having a conversation out loud here where I'm not coming to any conclusions. I'm just throwing stuff out there. I know somebody will be like, she said blah, 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 but I just have to make that clear. Like, I'm just throwing things out there. Like, that book was almost, it seemed almost as though it was overtly to destroy his own credibility.
Yes.
Like, he almost wanted to destroy his own credibility. And that's the purpose of the book.
Especially knowing what he knew, knowing what he knew would be compared with the testimony and the record. Yeah, I don't quite understand that. And I got to ask you this. Do you buy the fact that he claims he did not know Anthony Weiner and Huma Abedin were married? I mean, is that a lie or is that, what's that?
Look, on Friday, we talked about this. Was it Friday that we did the show? Yeah, I think it was Friday evening. Yes, we talked about this, how he said he didn't pay the laptop as much of a serious look as he should have because he didn't realize that Abedin was married to Weiner. I think that's, I cannot on any planet comprehend that that's the truth. But even if it were the truth, that's why he should have took a more serious look at that laptop, because it would mean that some random congressman had Hillary Clinton's emails on his own laptop. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it doesn't, actually. Tracy, we only have about, I can't believe this. I just, wanted to impose on your time for about 15 minutes or so, but I apologize to you because I know how busy you are. But having said that, in a lot, we've got about just a few minutes left here, so you know what, you've got the floor. Anything, it could be 20 seconds, it could be 2 minutes, it's up to you. What should we be looking at now? What's your take on things? I mean, you're sitting at the investigative table speaking to the investigators, fellow investigators out there. You've got the floor. What do you think? I mean, in general, with what we're seeing today and moving forward.
I think that it's going to be very important for us to pay very close attention to what Horowitz says today in these hearings and how the questions are framed. You can gather a lot of information just based off of how people ask the questions they ask. I think we should all be very vigilant, very careful to do our own work and make sure that we don't just take what someone else says at face value. That's a problem I think that we're having right now, is people just trusting, what other people say, and the people that are saying it may not be information or may not have done their due diligence, myself included, which is why, not that I don't do my due diligence, but I want you to look for yourself, which is why I provide the information for you. Anybody that tells you that open source journalism is not a very damning and important tool to discovering facts and things that people haven't seen before, the FBI, we've seen in you know, on unclassified files, uses open source reporting to base case decisions on. So it's a very important tool that we're all, you know, partaking in this in some way, shape, or form right now. Pay attention to that stuff. Do your own research. Throw your opinions out there. Throw your theories out there. Let's vet them out together and see where we can come up with. And let's just continue to pray that good people are doing the right thing and that this is going to move forward, albeit slowly. It will move forward to justice.
May God bless you, Tracy. You are, again, really, you're golden. I have a lot of respect for your intuition, your investigative prowess, and your ability to really ferret things out. We may not agree 100% of the time, and I'm glad we don't, because that's what stimulates the discussion. But I'll tell you this, I agree with your methods, I agree with your rationale, and I certainly agree with you 99.9% of the time, which is fantastic. And I thank you so much for your time, for appearing on the Hagmann Report. Again, folks, follow Tracy Beans at Tracy Beans on Twitter, support her on Patreon, fantastic YouTube channel, but get the word out there, and we need people like that. Tracy, thank you so much.
Thanks, Doug. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be a part of the little, you know, the family. It's awesome here. Thank you so much.
And folks, in my view, that's how it's done. Sitting at the conference table, basically being a part of the conference, investigative conference with a stellar investigative researcher, Tracy Beans, talking about the hot button issues of the day. And just going back and forth again. This was raw investigative information. So understand what it was. Understand the approach that we took. Kind of an inside look, sitting at the investigative table, sharing files, sharing notes, talking about having a conversation. And this, in my view, is the new method of, I shouldn't say new method, but this is one of the more effective methods, in my view, of citizen journalism, citizen investigative journalism, researching topics and getting the truth out there. This is why, as well, the lame stream, yellow journalism, yellow media is failing, because they've got the agenda. Their agenda, of course, is to destroy our nation, our representative republic. If they can't control it, they will destroy it. That's their intent. So what we are doing, and what Tracy is doing, is, of course, what? Exposing the people behind this agenda. By the way, speaking of that, Diana West has a new piece out. Actually, it's the third in a series. I would direct you to dianawest.net for additional information on that. Also on Twitter, you can send a tweet to Diana West. Tell her that you heard about her series, or her website, and the latest from the from Doug Hagmann. Let her know that we are paying attention to her work, because she's stellar out there exposing the communist / Marxist / Muslim roots of what we're seeing take place. And also, I want to give a great shout out to Kevin from the Northeast. I'll just leave it at that. Captain Roy D, thanks for all of your posts, your recent posts. People like I said, people like Captain Roy D, Tracy Beans, others, Laura Loomer, you get so many others, too numerous to mention, revealing things that the mainstream media will not. And that's what this is all about. Folks, I ask you, if you found any value to this episode or this show in general, if you find any value to it, please pass it along on social network, on your social media. Let other people know about the Doug Hagmann Radio Show, Doug Hagmann Investigative Hour. We can even make it a thing, # DHRS, Doug Hagmann Radio Show. Can we do that? I think we can. Thank you so very much for listening this morning. May God bless each and every one of you. Go out there, embrace the day. God bless. Until tonight, until the flagship show tonight. Take care. Stay safe.
The Doug Hagmann Radio Show is brought to you by The Hagmann Report. Tune in to The Hagmann Report weekdays, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, go to HagmannReport.com. That's HagmannReport.com.